The Depression-era satire of Colonel Stupnagel and Bud. That's our focus on this week's broadcast of Echoes of a Century. I'm King David McKenzie.
An hour of smiles in Town Hall tonight, folks. 60 minutes of fun and music brought to you by Ipana Toothpaste and Sal Apatica. Ipana for the smile of beauty, Sal Apatica for the smile of health. Fun with Colonel Stupnagel and Bud, music with Peter Van Steeden. And another big amateur contest, new voices, new music, new fun. It's Town Hall tonight. That crowd cheer. They're following the parade to the old town hall, having lots of fun. There goes Stupnagel and Bud leading the parade, sipping their toupees to the cheering multitude. And it's a big night tonight. Everybody's going to the old town hall. Hurry, everybody's going. Here's Fennelly Quirk. What's up, Fennelly?
The jig's up, Vaughn. The colonel's got some inventions to tell about. I'll see you in the hall.
And here's Quirkly Fennel. What's the rush, Quirkly?
Hi, Harry. The boys interview a little industry man tonight, and they've lost him. I gotta go look for him. See you inside.
And here are Stupnagel and Bud themselves. What's doing, boys?
Hello, Harry. Colonel and I are raising merry old Ned with Buck Rogers in the 25th century tonight. Some fun, huh, Colonel?
What's that?
Yes, sir. A great show tonight, folks. So hurry, hurry, hurry. Everybody's going. Well, sir, here we are in the old town hall, all set to begin the show, featuring tonight some startling new Stupnagel inventions, latest news in the colonel's campaign, an interview with a little industries man, and a Stupnagel and Bud burlesque of Buck Rogers in the 25th century.
It was a stormy day in 1932 when lightning knocked out the network link between NBC in New York City and the affiliates in Buffalo for their two networks, the Blue Network and the Red Network. At one of the stations, a couple of writers for local programs, F. Chase Taylor and Bud Hulick, were called upon to come up with last-minute material to fill the time until the network link could be reestablished. Taylor, who had spent some time in the Navy concocting silly inventions like underwater lighthouses for submarines, dredged up memories of that silliness and presented them in the character of Colonel Lemuel Q. Stupnagel, with Hulick interviewing and commenting on the silliness. It took 2 hours for the network to get back online, but by that time, Colonel Stupnagel and Bud had become an immediate hit with Buffalonians, with the station switchboard deluged with phone calls demanding they return the following day, which they did. The following week, the pair were given their own regular slot on the station, and by the end of the year, they were given their own Gloom Chasers show on NBC, on their way to eventually becoming, at one point, the second highest paid team of performers in the business, second only to Freeman Gosden and Charles Carell of Amos and Andy, then also on NBC. Stupnagel and Bud had a sharp edge to their characters that took aim at almost everything in sight, which, in a way, is why so little of their material survives today. For most recordings of a radio program to have been made by a station or network, there had to have been a specific request by the program's sponsor. And despite Stupnagel and Bud being immensely popular, their satire so challenged many conventions in American life at the time that it scared off most sponsors, and those that did sign up didn't stay long. There exists only 4 programs currently known and circulating among collectors of old-time radio. 2 programs from an unsponsored CBS series of 1935. CBS had made the recordings in the hope that a sponsor would buy the program, which never happened. And 2 hours as the summer 1936 replacement for Fred Allen on his NBC Town Hall Tonight show, sponsored already by the makers of Sal Hepatica Laxative and Ipana Toothpaste. On this program, we'll be listening to sections of those two broadcasts from the 1936 run. First, here's material from the broadcast of September the 23rd of that year, featuring announcer Harry Von Zell and F. Chase Taylor and Bud Hulick as Colonel Lemuel Q. Stupnagel and Bud.
Here they are, those two old-time hokey pokeyers, Colonel Lemuel Q. Stupnagel and Bud.
Hi, Bud.
Hi.
Good evening, friends, and welcome to Town Hall tonight. Bud, you can say some stuff to the audience, too, if you wish.
Well, I hardly know.
I've been hard at work in my laboratory on Observatory Hill lately, and out of the veritable labyrinth of stuff come several inventions and a couple of definitions.
Well, I'm sure we'd all like to hear about what you've got for us, Colonel. Go right ahead.
Well, my first invention is a set of false teeth that you wear in between your regular teeth.
In between your regular teeth? What's that for?
Eating three-decker sandwiches.
I see. What was that invention you told me about some time ago, Colonel, about a thing for false teeth, remember?
Yes, you mean the oscillating table?
Yeah, that's it, I guess, whatever oscillating means, yes.
Well, that was a table with a little spring underneath it, Bud, to make the table shake all the time.
Oh, yeah.
It's for putting your false teeth on when you go to bed so they chatter on cold nights, even if you're not wearing them.
Yeah, it's my own fault, I asked you.
Then I also have a cellophane mailbox. That's so you don't have to waste all that time opening the lid again to see if your letter's gone down after you put it in.
Uh-huh. Well, why not have a cellophane postman, too? That'd be cool.
Now, what would be the sense in the cellophane postman?
Well, he would deliver mail at your house, and you couldn't see him, and you'd be surprised then when you went down and found mail for yourself. Yeah.
How's that again?
I say, he could...
Now I catch on.
Yeah, well, I'm glad of that. Look, have you any definitions for us tonight, Colonel?
Definitions?
Yeah.
Sure, I've got a definition for electricity that'll knock you off your feet.
An electric chair?
No. Listen.
All right.
Electricity is stuff that if you're the one who owns the house, say, well, you can turn it on and off and on and off. And then the company sends the bills about it, off and on. And if you're the one who gets the bill, say, and if you're the one who doesn't pay, say, well, then, you're the one they turn it off, on.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks.
Now we present another outstanding revelation in the campaign to keep Stupnagel out of the White House.
Keep him out of the White House. You can't tell what he might do. Let's find a place for him in a lighthouse. Or maybe we could put him in a zoo.
It seems that Colonel Stupnagel has written a little play for you showing some of the things he might do if his campaign fails and he were elected. And I'm afraid that we'll have to listen to this thing that the Colonel wrote. The scene, Bazazas Prison. A prisoner named Squalid Fiddlestuffer stands facing a little group of reporters and prison attendants.
Well, Squalid, you're about to walk the last mile. Why don't you come, please, Squalid, and tell the truth? Come on now, let's have the honest truth. Did you shoot your mother-in-law?
Well, Warden, I'll come clean. I did shoot the old lady. Yeah, but really, Warden, I couldn't resist it. There she was, Warden, standing alone in the kitchen, bending over the sink, opening a tin can with my razor.
That's enough.
I couldn't help it.
That's enough. Solid, I'm going to leave your fate in the hands of President Stupnagel here. Mr. President, prisoner is yours to do with what you may.
Thank you, Warden. Squalid?
Yes, sir, Mr. President.
You didn't really mean to do this thing to your mother-in-law, did you?
Yes, sir, I did.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
Oh, well, boys will be boys. Now, go pack your things. You're coming home with me.
Home? With you, Mr. President?
Yes. I have a little job for you. Wallet.
The next scene in this pictorial drama showing what Stupnagel will do if he gets into the White House takes place in the Treasury Building in Washington. Bud, Secretary of the Treasury, is conferring with the Treasurer of the United States.
They are at loggerheads.
Mr. Von Zell, I'm sorry.
Now, just a minute.
Now, just a minute
you
to me. Listen,
to me.
Pay attention here. I'm sorry to have to disagree with you this way, but the dollar bills should be even smaller than they are.
But, my dear Mr. Bud, your argument is wrong.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. My goodness, the dollar bills disappear quickly enough the way they are without making them any smaller.
Well, that's what you think.
Yes, that's what I think.
Yeah?
I'm right.
Yeah?
I'm right.
Yeah.
I'm right. I think if we had a dollar bill the size of a newspaper, it would be much better for all concerned.
Oh, well, then I suppose your argument is...
Yes, that's what my argument is. You're right.
I don't agree with you.
Well, seem to be getting nowhere with this argument, my dear.
You're telling me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I should tell you.
Yeah.
Well, we should leave the matter up to the president. Here he is now. The whatchamacallit of the United States.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. What seems to be the difficulty here?
Well,
Now, wait a minute. It's my turn to talk. We're arguing about the size of the new dollar bills, Mr. President.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Von Zell claims they should be larger than they are, and I claim they should be smaller.
Should be larger.
Well, they should be smaller.
Larger?
We will leave it up to you, sir, with your good judgment.
Well, then, here is my decision. Go pack your things, Wallet. You're coming home with me.
Home? With you, Mr. President?
Yes. I have a little job for you, Wallet.
Now the scene changes again, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm sure you're as pleased as we all are about it. This time it has to do with the Army and the Navy. Bud is now Secretary of War and is having a bitter argument with the Secretary of the Navy.
Now, Mr. Secretary, get quiet. Watch your stuff there. I'm sorry, but I can't have my soldiers spending their time washing your battleships.
Oh, is that so?
Yes, that's so.
That may be all well and good, Mr. Secretary.
Yeah?
But tell me this.
Yeah?
Who took your Army men out bathing in the surf last week? Who did?
Well, you got me there.
Yeah, my men of the Navy.
Oh.
Does seem that the least you could do would be to wash our battleship.
Oh, no.
Yes.
That's where I object. I object.
It's impolite to interrupt.
My goodness.
We've got to be fair about this thing. My goodness, one of the first things I learned in school as a boy was the turn affairs about play.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of difference between washing battleships and going bathing in the surf. Now, Mr. Secretary,
is that
let
what
me
you,
tell you?
You can't tell me.
I can tell
you.
You
won't tell me anything at all. I'm going to argue.
The whatchamacallit of the United States.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. What seems to be the difficulty here? Or am I on the wrong page?
We're arguing about the Army.
Yeah.
We're arguing about the Army and Navy, Mr. President.
The Army what?
The Army and the Navy.
Navy what?
Von Zell here claims that my men should wash his battleships, and I claim they shouldn't.
They should.
They should not.
They should.
Oh, fudge.
Exactly.
Now, after all, the Army's job is to march and go to camp for 2 weeks every year. Why should... Don't you think so?
Yeah, no.
All right. Why should they have to cleanse the first line of defense besides?
Oh, I know all this, Mr. President. It's obvious, but my Navy men took the whole Army surf bathing last week and bought them hot dogs and just whistles.
Now, you see?
Exactly, and I feel that they should receive some kind of a little present or something for doing that.
I don't believe it at all.
Hush up, you fellows, for goodness sake. Is that all you two secretaries have to say?
Well, I guess
so. Well, then, here is my decision. Go pack your things, Squalid. You're coming home with me.
Home with you? Wait a minute. Didn't we just do that Squalid thing?
Oh, yes, I think we did.
Yeah.
Well, about these dollar bills... why not let the Marines bathe them in the surf?
Now, wait a minute, will you, Mr. President? Look, you're confused, you know. We're talking about the Army and Navy now.
Oh, yes. Now, as I see it, the question is, what shall we do about this soldier who took the Navy's battleships and shot his mother-in-law in the surf? But where do the dollar bills come in?
Mr. President, please, will you? The issue at... coughing?
Yes.
The issue at present is, should the Army be obliged to wash the Navy's battleships?
Well, how many battleships have we now?
Well, now, let's see. Just a second.
Oh, you're in again.
Yes. How many battleships have we? We have one battleship.
One battleship. That's very good. Now, Secretary of War, how many men in our army?
How many men? Wait till I look at my calendar here, Mr. President. Oh, yes, here we are, our army. 12 men.
Let's see.
Yeah.
Let's see, 12 men and one battleship. That makes 13, yeah. That's an unlucky number.
Yes, what'll we do?
There's only one thing we can do.
Well, what's that?
Go pack your things. I have a little job for you, Squalid.
Colonel, you know, we have an important interview tonight with a man. That is, I have. Why don't you go backstage now for a while and rest, huh?
All right, Bud, I will. Who's the guy you're going to interview?
He's sitting right down there. Now, run along, Colonel, like a good boy. Well, you can come up now, Mr. Soup Lump.
Hello, Bud, everybody.
Hello there, Mr. Soup Lump. Look, would you mind telling the folks your whole name before I begin asking you all the questions?
Oh, no, no. My full name is Annual Q Soup Lump.
Uh-huh. Well, I am...
Pretty simple.
Yeah, pretty simple, yeah. I understand that you qualify for one of our little-known men of industry. What do you do for a living?
Oh, me?
Yes, you.
Well, I work at a restaurant. I unlump potatoes.
Oh, I see.
Sometimes people call it D-lump or dis-lump, but I call it unlump. It makes a very nice thing of it.
Yes,
unlumping taking all the...
Think it would, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You're the fella, then, who's responsible for the nice, smooth, creamy mashed potatoes we get in restaurants.
Yo, fella.
Uh-huh. Look, how did you happen to get onto a job like that? I mean, what prompted you to become a mashed potato unlumper?
Well, I heard a fella say once, I hope you get lumps in your mashed potatoes, and it got me to thinking.
Do tell.
Oh, do tell yourself.
Yeah.
And that expression has had such a wide following ever since that there is quite a demand for unlumpers.
Oh, yeah.
I am the head unlumper. I got several men working under me like
that. Well, isn't that interesting?
I just take care of the great big lumps.
Oh, the great big lumps.
Yeah, my assistants, they take care of the little teensy-weensy lumps. I sit there with a big dish of mashed potatoes in front of me looking like anything for a lump.
Uh-huh.
And when I find a big one, I unlump it. Sometimes, though, sometimes I just sit there and dream.
I dream. Yeah, there's nothing like sitting dreaming in front of a nice dish of mashed potatoes. Is there, Mr. Stooplin?
Oh, I don't know. I never went into that very much.
Wait a minute. When you sit there dreaming, what do you dream about?
Oh, a lot of things. I guess the lumps of mashed potatoes have gotten me to think of many other things I'd like to smooth out. Every time I see anything with a bump in it, I feel like getting right to work on it and moving it out.
Smooth. Yeah.
I've often wanted to get Soup Nagel off the town hall, show.
Yeah, well, quiet, Mr. Bump Nagel. The colonel's right outside the door there. Now, look, tell me, what do you use to unlump mashed potatoes?
Oh, sort of a hammer thing. When I see a big lump, I just take a good look at it. I tee it up a bit on some more potatoes, get my stance, and then swing at it. Once I made the sink in one shot.
Well, that's wonderful.
Usually, though, I bring my hammer down on it with a resounding thwack.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes there aren't any potatoes left in the bowl. But anyway, they don't have any lumps either. And sometimes there isn't any bowl left either.
Yeah, I see.
Sometimes they go right through the table.
It's not necessary to go into that.
Yeah, sometimes they go right through the kitchen floor and come out of the cellar.
Now, look, just a minute, Mr. Lump, will you? You're going a little bit too far. I mean, there's a limit to everything.
I went through the cellar floor and right on through the earth to China.
Yeah, I understand.
It was wonderful in China. Yeah. I learned to speak Chinese.
Uh-huh, yeah.
One day when I was walking along a street in Shanghai, a fellow came up to me, a restaurant owner he was, and he said, "Hey, can you unlump potatoes?" You know, pong, pong, pong. And I said, "Yes, I think I can." That's how I started. I understood the chapter of Chinese.
Yeah.
I unlumped potatoes for him for quite a while. And one day I was unlumping a great big lump, and I hit it so hard it went right through the bowl and the table and the floor and the cellar floor and right through to America.
Right through to America.
Oh!
Yeah, to the town hall program, I suppose.
America, I love you.
Yeah, look. How does it seem to be back in America again?
Huh?
I say, how does it seem to be back in America?
Oh, in America again. What do you mean? I've never been anywhere else.
Well, wait a minute. You just said you'd been in China.
Yeah, I guess I must have been dreaming in one of my mashed potatoes again.
Yeah, good night, Mr. Stupnagel.
Good night, Bud.
Now, Colonel Stupnagel and Bud present another of their popular burlesques of radio. Colonel?
Yes, tonight we have chosen that very fine and universally known show called Buck Rogers in the 25th Century. And I'm going to give you our version of it with the kind permission of the sponsors. But of course, in the 25th century, things are different than in the 20th century. What with all the inventions and stuff which have been invented meanwhile. People float around through the air with the greatest of ease. And they have rocket motors and disintegrators and paralysis rays and psychic restriction rays and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, what is a psychic restriction ray, Colonel?
Then they have a gyrocosmic relativitator and an electro-hypno-mentalophone, too.
Hey, Colonel, what is a psychic restriction ray?
Didn't your mother ever tell you anything? Well, anyway, in just a minute, we will transport you to the 25th century. But meanwhile, I want Harry to give a short resume of the characters in the cast. Bud and I, of course, will take all the parts ourselves, as usual, just to make the thing more confusing. Harry Von Zell.
Thank you, Colonel. The characters in this drama are Buck Rogers.
I think that's enough, Harry. All Thank right. you very much. Now, on with the show.
Buck Rogers in the 25th inning.
Well, it certainly looks as though Buck and Wilmer are on the spot tonight. Their headlong dash through space in Traxel's molecular propulsion ship was indeed a headlong dash through space in Traxel's molecular propulsion ship. Anyway, here they are in a room of the Hidden City's palace, awaiting a visit by the so-called great leader. Let's join them.
Here we go. 500 years into the furniture.
Now, wait a minute, Harry. That word is future, not furniture, you know.
Excuse me, Lily. 500 years into the future.
Well, Wilma, here we are behind the eight ball again.
Yes, Buck. Yes, here we are, all right. How's the molecular propulsion ship?
How's the what?
The molecular whatchamacallit.
Okay, Wilma. Except at any minute now, I expect the great leader to do something terrible to us.
No, Buck. Buck, not that. Not that great leader, Buck, with that smooth-running disintegrator of his.
Listen, Wilma. Do you hear anything, Wilma?
Why, I'm not quite sure, John. I mean, Buck.
What's that shadow lurking in the offing there, and what's he lurking for?
Buck! Buck!
Here I am, Wilma. It is I who are holding your hand.
No, who am holding my hand? It would be better English, Buck.
Yes, but who is that creature lurking in the shadows?
Oh, I don't know.
Cat,
I don't know.
Oh, you don't?
No.
Come out of there, you. And if you are the great leader, mind well, or I shall jolly well blow your head off with this... I can't pronounce that, Wilma.
Disintegrator.
Oh, disintegrator. Mm. Come out, I say, or I shall shoot. Come out. Say, who's in there anyway?
Ain't nobody in here but us chickens.
Well, thank goodness. I guess I must have been dreaming, Wilma. But we must get on. We have no time to tarry. Time's a-wastin', eyes a-muggin'.
Sorry, Adam.
Now, come along, Wilma. We must explore this cave farther. Shall we walk or ride?
No, let's take a cab, Buck.
A taxi. A taxi.
A taxi.
Where to, sir?
The Onyx Club driver, and we're in a hurry. Will you have another, Wilma?
No, I guess one more won't hurt me, Buck.
The same, waiter. I wonder if the great leader is here, Wilma.
Oh, of course he is, Billy. That's he with the baton there, leading the orchestra.
Do you suppose he sees us? Why, yes, he does. He spied us. What do we do, Wilma?
Oh, sit still. Sit still and wait. Maybe he doesn't recognize us, Buck.
If he so much as makes one single move toward us, you put on this non-recoil energy projector, take my hand, and we'll de-energize the whole joint.
Buck! Buck, he's coming this way. Oh, quick, quick. Give me the non-recoil energy projector or whatever it is. Quick, quick.
Here, Wilma, put it on. No. No, your arms go through here.
Through here?
Yes, and they come out here.
Oh, yeah.
Quick now, here we go.
Well, that was a mighty close call for our hero and heroine, wasn't it? That ends episode number 2 of tonight's thrilling Buck Rogers in the 25th Century drama. As we pass to episode number 3, we find Buck and Wilma again in the cave, several hundred feet underground. There is a peculiar odor in the cave, which Buck immediately recognizes. Here they are.
Buck.
Yes, Wilma. Never fear, I am by your side.
Mm. What's that peculiar odor?
I don't know, Wilma. Maybe it's fresh air.
Mm. But the announcer said you immediately recognized it, Buck.
Well, then, it's that deadly ammonia calcium nitrate ether gas. Do you suppose the great leader is trying another of his dastardly stunts on us again?
Oh, it might be, Buck. It might be. In fact, it seems a little hard to breathe in here.
Yes, Wilma, you're right. It is a little hard to breathe. In fact, it's very hard indeed to breathe.
Yes.
In fact, it's very, 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 very difficult to breathe.
Yes.
You don't think it might be killer cane, do you, Wilma?
Do you feel sort of guilty, Buck?
Yes, I do.
More than usual, Buck?
Yes, I do.
That's some dopey, then, believe me. But...
Now, come on. Get up on your feet. We've got to fight against the effect of that ray. If you don't, it'll put you in a hypnotic trance.
But I'm fighting it all I can, Buck. But I don't want to.
Oh, if Dr. Huer were only here.
Oh, yes. If Dr. Huer were only here. Maybe that is he now. Come in. Why, it is. Hello, Dr. Huer.
Hi-ho, everybody. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. R.E. Huer.
Thank you, Mr. Valley. I have received many letters asking me to say a few words about lack of sleepiness. Lack of sleepiness comes from two sources. Lack of vitamin R in the bloodstream, overabundance of vitamin Q in the left lung, and several other things which I am not now at liberty to divulge.
Thank you, Dr. Huer. Now, the next guest on our program tonight needs no introduction to the radio audience. They are Buck and Wilma of the Buck Rogers and the 25th Century program. A pleasure indeed to introduce Buck and Wilma.
Yes. Where were we, Wilma?
Being very dopey on account of the hypnotic effect of that hypnotic ray, Buck.
Oh, yes. We must get out of this place.
Yes.
We must get out of this place.
We must. Yes, you can get out of anything in radio.
Oh, I understand.
Yes. Yeah. Let's see if Hattie Van Zyl can get us out. Oh, Hattie.
Yes, Buck? Wilma. Why, but it's awfully something in here.
Hattie, get the orchestra to play, will you? Will you please, Hattie?
Here in the cave?
Yes, here in the thing.
Hey, Pete Van Steeden. Play something. Quick.
Okay, Harry. If the boys can withstand the hypnotic ray, 1, 2, 3.
Well, Buck, the great leader got everybody.
Yes. Yes, Wilma, he even got Ben Steeden. He got everybody but you and I. We must be out of here and ready for next week's episode.
Yes, sir, we... Or we won't get our check.
Or we won't get our check.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Just a minute, Peter. Ladies and gentlemen, we want to try to get some information on what Stupnagel and Bud are going to do next week.
Yeah, what are we going to do next week, Colonel?
Well, I'll tell you. Let's decide right now.
All right, Colonel. I think
we I don't know.
All right, hands up, you guys. This is a stick-up.
Hey, what do you mean? Hey, Colonel. Colonel, the guy's got a gun.
All right, keep your dukes up now. Where's your dough?
All right. But just a minute. I'll keep my hands up. Hey, Bud, this reminds me. Let's do a burlesque of gangbusters next week.
Say, that's a swell idea, Colonel. Gangbusters.
Say, is you guys going to do a gangbusters next week?
Yeah.
Oh, goody, goody. Hey, Ma! Mama, they're going to do gangbusters next week.
Town hall doors for tonight, ladies and gentlemen, until next Wednesday when we invite you to join us again for another happy hour of smiles in the old town hall. Good night.
This is the Red Network of the National Broadcasting Company.
From September the 23rd, and now from September the 30th, 1936, rare recordings on Echoes of a Century of F. Chase Taylor and Bud Hulick, better remembered as Colonel Lemuel Q. Stupnagel and Bud.
In Town Hall tonight, folks, 60 minutes of fun and music brought to you by Ipana Toothpaste and Salapatica. Ipana for the smile of beauty, Salapatica for the smile of health. Fun with Colonel Stupnagel and Bud, music with Peter Van Steeden, and another big amateur contest. New voices, new music, new fun. It's Town Hall tonight! Yeah. Listen to that. There's an enthusiastic throng following the parade to the old town hall tonight, folks. There go Colonel Stupnagel and Bud leading the march, bounding about like the graceful gazelles they are, throwing bonbons to the crowd right and left. It's a big night tonight, so hurry, hurry, hurry. Everybody's going. Everybody's going. Here's Frightwig Upjump, the famous journalist. Where are you going, Mr. Upjump?
I'm covering the Colonel's interview tonight, Von Zell. I want a seat down in front.
Here's Fantastic Whistle. Why aren't you in the hall, Mr. Whistle?
I'm supposed to get the final results of the Colonel's campaign tonight. I want a seat way in the back.
And here are Colonel Stupnagel and Bud themselves. What's new, fellas?
Hiya, Harry. We're getting out our gats to take a few shots at gangbusters tonight. Some shooting, huh, Colonel?
What's that?
Yes, sir. A big show tonight, folks. So come one, come all. Everybody's going. Everybody's going.
Well, friends, welcome and double welcome and thrice welcome and beyond welcome to Town Hall tonight. This is our farewell appearance here on the stage of the hall, and there's one thing I want to get off my chest, if I may be excused, Bud.
All right.
The Bristol-Myers Company, makers of Sal Hepatica and Ipana, have been the most undissatisfied sponsors we've ever had, haven't they?
Ah, you bet, Colonel.
And seriously, if they wanted us to do this same thing over again for the next summer, I like them so well, I'd do it for nothing. Wouldn't you, Bud?
Why, certainly. Sure.
I'll get that.
Yeah, all right.
Hello? Yes, this is the Colonel. Bristol who? You're not interested, I see. Well, goodbye.
What'd they want, Colonel?
I couldn't hear a word the guy said.
Well, maybe they were congratulating us on our new show.
New show?
Yeah, yeah, next Sunday afternoon.
On the radio with a sponsor and everything?
Well, of course it'll be on the radio, sir.
Goody, 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 then.
Well, why all the goodies?
I've got a radio. I'll listen in.
It's a good trick if you can do it. Now, look, Colonel, I wish you'd sort of give us a few of your new inventions and definitions.
Boy, I was hoping you'd ask me for those, but I've been working on a thing I call my sub-trailer.
Sub-trailer? What's that?
Sub-trailer, believe me. Well, it's a sort of a trailer that goes on behind the regular trailer that trails along behind your car when you take a trip and take a trailer along for a trailer trip. You know what I mean?
I'm afraid you've caught me in a lie, Colonel. Yes, I know what you mean. What's a sub-trailer for?
Well, that's so you can take some other people along with you in it.
Oh, I think that's fine.
The other people are an invention, too.
Oh,
yeah, huh? they're so you can have people along to borrow stuff from and to talk about.
I see. That's fine.
Then inside of the regular trailer, I have a telephone to save you money.
Now, wait just a minute. How can you save money by having a telephone in a trailer?
Well, when you think you want to call somebody up, you go ahead and call them up, see? But you can't get them because the phone isn't connected, so that's where you save money. Why, listen, last year alone, I know a fellow who saved enough money that way to set his son up in business.
What business?
The business of selling telephones to trailers that aren't connected, so you can't call, and therefore you save enough to set your son
my
up.
My stars, Colonel, how under the sun you ever think of silly stuff like that is beyond me.
Stars, sun, that reminds me, Bud. I've got a series of definitions for the sun and for the stars and for the rain and the moon that'll slay you. You want to hear them?
I was afraid of that. Definition for the sun, rain, moon, and stars, huh?
Uh-huh.
Well, if you promise to let Peter play afterwards, go ahead.
Well, the sun is stuff that you get burn from it.
Uh-huh.
Rain is stuff they call ball games on account of.
Yeah.
The moon is what some mountain has been trying to get up over Kate Smith all this time.
Yeah.
And the stars, oh, the stars.
Uh-huh. What are they?
Stars are things that twinkle, twinkle, little, how I wonder what you.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Now we present the final chapter in the historic campaign to keep Stufnagel out of the White House.
Keep him out of the White House. You can't tell what he might do. Let's find a place for him in a lighthouse. Or maybe we could put him in a zoo.
A special election of the voters is being held today all over the United States to determine whether or not we shall have Stufnagel in the White House or out of it. And the jittery candidate sits in his campaign headquarters at Crawling on the Hudson, New York, as reports come in from every nook and cranny of the country. Bud, who has stood by our candidate through thick and thin, high, wide and handsome, black and blue and fire and water, is pacing up and down as telegraph machines bring in the news.
Quiet! Quiet here. Whatever you're doing, drop.
Nice dropping, boys. Now, in a second or two, we expect a report from California. Stand by. Well, here it is now. San Francisco, California. From 456 out of 200 precincts, final tabulations. Colonel Lemuel Q. Stufnagel of New York, no vote.
Congratulations, yeah. Colonel. Not a single vote from California.
Thank you, Mr. Fiddlestuffer. Thank you. My, but I'm excited. Maybe I won't get into the White House after all.
Hey, is this the campaign headquarters for keeping Whitenagel out of the Stoof House? I got a message for you.
Hooray, man. Listen to this. It's from Dallas, Texas. It says, practically complete reports from 678 out of 200 counties here give Stufnagel no votes and his opponent 456,678. It looks as though I have a good chance of not winning. Oh, boy.
Hey, my goodness, what's this?
Hey,
Colonel, they're bringing the Alabama votes in here in an armored car. Here comes the man up the stairs with them now.
Alabama, 24 votes for Underwood.
Oh, well, that's fine, boys, but how about Stufnagel?
Who's Stufnagel?
I'll get that phone, man. Quiet now. Hello, campaign headquarters for keeping Stufnagel out of the thing. Stufspiegelnageling. Oh, hello, Ma. Yeah, it's a fine fight, Ma. Yeah, hope to lose any minute now, Ma. Yeah. Yeah, I'll be right home, Ma. Goodbye.
Who is that, Colonel?
My father. He wanted to know about the mortgage.
Hey, shut that door. My gosh, that's ice cold wind coming in there.
Sorry, sir, but you'll have to stand it for a moment. The Alaska vote is coming in.
Alaska. Well, now, this is fine. I am Captain Bob Tarsus, folks, and I have come here on my little ship, the Norrissey, the many long miles between here and the coast of Alaska. There was a vast amount of interest in the voting, and Stroopnagel is a vast favorite up in the vast stretches of the frozen North Country.
Yeah, well, how was
Just
a minute.
Well,
how was the voting, Captain? We're all anxious to know, you know, as the thing is pretty close here in the United States.
Every person voted this year, and it was just fine. As nice a compliment as I ever paid to any candidate.
Yeah, well, who won up there, Captain?
Well, Stroopnagel is a great favorite up there. Everybody
yeah,
in
Captain,
the whole...
Captain, hey, please, look. What was the final count of the vote?
Everybody likes Stroopnagel up there. When we were going...
Wait a minute. Wait. How many votes did Stroopnagel get?
Minus 42.
Say, Harry... Harry.
Yeah.
During all this confusion, have any results been coming in from the other states of the Union?
Yes, Bud, we've got them. Attention. The total vote. Other candidates, 13,567,000, double aught, 2. Colonel Stroopnagel, 1.
A vote for me? A vote for me, Harry?
Yes.
Why, I've been double-crossed. The very idea. Give me that phone. Hello, operator. Get me Rhinelander 4-4-4-2-2. Hello, Ma? Ah, oh, gee, thanks, Ma.
If he gets an all-white crown, we'll never get him out of there no more.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Colonel stepped off the stage a minute to finish writing last week's show. So now I'm going to take this opportunity of interviewing one of our little-known men of industry. Would you come up to the microphone there, Junior, please?
Yeah, yes, sir. Come right up. Hello.
Hello, Mr. Priddle. Have I got that name right?
Yeah, Priddle. Pyramid Q. Priddle is the whole name.
Well, that's nice to know that. What do you do for a living, Mr. Priddle?
What?
I say, what do you do for a living?
I pile a fruit in fruit store windows in pretty pyramids.
Oh.
Yeah, a lot on the bottom and yeah, not so good on top.
So you're the guy who does that, huh?
Yeah.
It must take quite a time to learn to put oranges and lemons and stuff in pyramids that way.
Yeah, it does. I guess I was just a natural at it, though, you see. I was born in Egypt right under the very nose of the pyramid.
You were, huh?
Yeah, my mother was... But my father wasn't. But we lived there on the desert, and sometimes the sand blew in my eyes. But I don't mind the sand once in a while. Look at spinach.
Yeah,
spinach
yeah. Now, look, I know. Wait a minute. I know all about
that. You're looking spinach?
Yes, I've looked at it.
It's
yeah.
pretty nice.
Yeah, it certainly is, yeah. Look, sort of go slowly with it. We want everyone to understand what you're saying.
Yeah, I get it. Have you ever been to Egypt? It's nice over there, up the Nile and down in the tombs and stuff.
Look, did the Egyptian pyramids make you think of piling fruit in that form?
No, they didn't have a thing to do with it. Nothing
Glad you spoke about them then.
I am too. Yeah. If I were a pyramid and somebody spoke about me, I'd be glad too, because after all, a pyramid can't speak about anybody else, and neither can a sphinx. Most people think that only the Sphinx can say anything, but he's got a good press agent advertising, you know.
Yeah, all right.
A hen
look,
cackles
wait,
when
just,
a duck doesn't,
wait,
but you use the hen's
minute.
Eggs, you
quiet.
Don't.
Quiet.
Nobody uses duck's eggs.
Look, let's forget the Sphinx and get back to the fruit piled in pyramid form, shall we?
Yeah, well, it was like this. I was putting fruit in the fruit store window, you see. I worked in a fruit store at the time.
Yes, you must have. Yeah.
I must have. Oh, I was placing apples here and grapefruit here and oranges there and, no, oranges here and grapefruit over there. Well, anyway, a fellow named Joe Glutz, you know Joe.
Oh, sure.
Oh, great guy, Joe.
Yeah, you bet.
Nice boy.
Yeah, Joe.
Great fellow, yeah. Oh, well, Joe came along and he kept saying to me, bet on pyramids, bet on pyramids. Pyramid is a horse, you know.
Yeah, nice fellow, pyramid.
You bet.
Yeah, great guy.
Oh, you said a great fellow, pyramid.
Yeah, Joe's a nice horse, too.
Fine horse, Joe. Yeah, well, pyramid said to me, bet on Joe. Hey, I'm on my... Hey, who got me missed? Who? Come out, wherever. Who got... Well, I'm back again now. Well, anyway, while he was telling me to bet on this horse Pyramid, I was gradually, unconsciously...
What?
Yeah, I was gradually, unconsciously...
Yeah, I can understand I the unconscious part of it, yeah.
No, I was gradually, without thinking, sort of piling up the oranges in the shape of a pyramid.
Uh-huh.
Well, Joe left, and suddenly I heard old Frozen Face coming.
Are you the same fella talking?
Yeah. Old Frozen Face. Yeah. Who is old Frozen
That's
Face?
What I'm supposed to
yeah,
say.
Yeah, he's the boss. His real name is Cold Map. We boys call him Frozen Face, but not to his face.
Yeah, just to his frozen.
Yeah. But instead of getting mad at me for shaping the pile like a pyramid, the boss gave one yelp of joy, ran to the phone and called the bookie and put $2 on Pyramid to win.
Well, did the horse win?
Oh, it was a great race.
A nice race.
Oh, fine.
Yeah, Joe's a nice
oh,
race.
Oh, you bet. So's Pyramid.
Yeah, which do you like best, Pyramid or race?
Oh, of course. Where was I?
Now, look, did Pyramid win the race? I mean, that's what we're all interested
so
in.
So now the boss has got me doing nothing else but piling oranges and grapefruit in the shape of pyramids in the window of the fruit store.
Yeah, but what do you do meantime for recreation?
Oh, I've been trying a new stunt. I've been trying for months now to put the pyramid in the window upside down.
Well, did you have any luck?
Luck, you bet. The horse came in and paid 5-1.
Now, Colonel Stoopnagel and Bud present another of their popular burlesques of radio. Tonight, a takeoff on that well-known network radio program entitled Gangbusters. Mr. Phillips Lord, when asked by the Colonel whether his permission might be granted, replied...
What can we lose?
Which led the Colonel to believe that it was all right with Mr. Lord. So now Town Hall takes pleasure in presenting that eminent criminologist, Colonel Ganguel Q. Stoopbuster, and his partner Bud in a daring expose. Are you ready, boys?
What can we lose?
Calling the police, calling the G-men, calling the trains, calling the army, calling the navy. Can't you hear me calling Caroline?
Gangbusters, stories of the police and their unending crusade against crime. Sent to you every what you may call it at this time by Parcels Post and sponsored by that superb product, Foist Binders. The only oatmeal with the true cornflake flavor. Gangbusters gives you nothing but the truth. The whole truth and nothing but the truth.
No fibbing.
No fibbing either. Tonight, Phillips H. Lord will interview Police Chief Timothy Hay of the Puckering Valley Police to get the lurid details on the crime career of the vicious, atrociously horrible person, Bucktooth Thad the Slasher Thorax. But first, just let me tell you a few things about Foist Binders. I have asked Mrs. Plush G. Stoker, a housewife, to answer this burning question for us. When you sit down to your breakfast in the morning, what is the first thing you do, Mrs. Stoker?
I call upstairs to Plush, my husband, and tell him to get the deuce down to breakfast or I'll brain the son of a gun.
Thank you, Mrs. Stoker.
Well, thank you, too.
Well, here in the private office of Chief of Detectives sits Police Chief Timothy Hay of the Puckering Valley Police Force. Chief Hay has come by train, bus, airplane, and stagecoach all the way from Puckering Valley, 5 miles up the post road, to review with Mr. Lord the strange and inhuman career of Bucktooth Thad the Slasher Thorax. So, Phil, it's up to you.
Thank you, Harry.
Thank you, Phil.
And thank you for thanking me, Harry.
Thank you.
Chief Hay, am I correct when I say that Bucktooth was one of the nastiest criminals in the past decade?
No, I'd say in the past 10 years. Yes, Mr. Lord, Bucktooth was beastly. He was a nasty man. He was a kiddly deller.
Deadly killer, huh, Chief?
You said it.
I said it. Now, look, as I understand it, you first saw Bucktooth...
Your elbow off the script.
You first saw Bucktooth... begin again. You first saw Bucktooth, whatchamacallit...
Third time you first saw Bucktooth there.
The whatchamacallit thorax right up in Puckering Valley in 1892. Is that true?
Yes, he was just a babe in arms at the time, Mr. Lord.
Just a babe.
Yeah, he was running around with his gun Ma even then. She was a cute little rascal, 4 months old.
Well, think of that. Things have happened since then, though, haven't they, Chief?
Yes, Mr. Lord. Much stuff has passed under the thing since then. Bucktooth Thad the Slasher and his gun Ma were planning their career of crime. It was a hot day in August. Two baby carriages were parked next to each other in a no-parking space. The birds were singing overhead. One baby, a boy, was speaking to another baby, a girl, in the next carriage.
Go. A goo. A go. A goo goo. How come you go me like you go, go, go? How come you go me like you go?
Well, I can see that by that, Chief Hay, that things were coming to a pretty pass, even at that early age. A couple of crooners, huh? Then what happened?
Well, P.L., we heard nothing until 18 years later. They caught him stealing peanuts from a peanut butter factory.
Ah, the old shell game, huh, Chief?
Shucks.
So, Bucktooth liked peanuts, huh, Chief?
So they say. There was a rumor around that he liked pecans, but they found he liked peanut butter.
Who's writing your material now, Chief?
Well, it was in a peanut butter factory. Bucktooth and his pal were at the cash register when suddenly... Well, go ahead.
That must have been an awful mess, Chief. How many were killed?
Well, sir, not a shot was fired.
Well, shut my mouth. What happened then?
Well, he was sent up the river for 10 years. The next we heard of him was the day after he went to Sing Sing. Of course, when he got out, he immediately went back to his old pals of the underworld. His best friend at that time was Cuthbert the Gouger. So now, Mr. Lord, we will have a scene where Thad the Slasher and Cuthbert the Gouger are entering a jewelry store with the idea of stealing jewels. A new idea. Listen.
Hey, hey, easy there. Easy, Thad the Slasher, Thorax. Yeah.
Do you want the whole neighborhood to hear us?
Let up, Cuthbert the Gouger. I guess I know my business. Now raise the window and get inside.
Okay, yeah.
Hey, I don't like the looks of the joint.
Ah, shut up, shut up. Now, look, here's the cash register. Let's see, you push the little valve down. Empty, huh? Well, I guess we gotta get the safe. Where's that safe? Have you seen a safe?
Here it is.
Yeah,
to keep the jewels well locked up. There's nothing like a safe for keeping jewels.
Yes, and there's nothing so safe as eating Feist Pointers, the oatmeal that tastes like cornflakes.
Hey, who is this guy? A copper?
Nah, he's just one of them radio advertisers. Go ahead and open the safe. He ain't gonna bother us.
When your little boy comes home early from school in the afternoon after a hard day and he says, "Mother, I'm hungry," what do you do? Tell him he can't have anything to eat until dinner time? Perhaps. But if you were a wise mother, you will say to him...
Hand me that nitroglycerin.
Is that the end, Chief?
Yes, that's the way it was told to me.
It makes a nice dull story, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Thanks, Chief. And now, Harry, if you will, please, I'd appreciate it if you'd announce something about the clues, which we always broadcast at the end of our programming.
All right, Phil. We now bring you several honest-to-goodness clues sent in to us from police chiefs all over the country. A clue from the chief of police of Dandruff on the Knob, Nevada.
We want information on Bud, partner of the team known as Stubnagel and Bud, for grand larceny. When last seen, he was jumping off the top story of the Empire State Building with a piece of flypaper in his hand. If located, please gather up the pieces and lose them.
A clue from the chief of police of Puckering on the Valley.
Information wanted on the whereabouts of a man calling himself Colonel Stubnagel. He is about 200 feet high and weighs 38 pounds. When last seen, he was wearing umbrellas on his feet and carrying a pair of high button brown shoes above his head. If found, please notify.
What about his record?
It's broken. Broken. Thank you.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much.
Hold it. Hold it just a minute, Peter.
reminder, please. Ladies and gentlemen, Stoop Nagel and Bud have an announcement to make about their town hall show next week. All right, boys, what's doing for next week?
Oh, boy, are we going to have a terrific show on town hall next week, huh, Colonel?
Yes, sir, the best show in months.
Well, it sounds swell, fellas. What is it?
Fred Allen will be back.
And so we close the town hall doors on the final show of the summer series in which Stoop Nagel and Bud added so much to our Hour of Smiles. Join us again next week when Fred Allen returns for more Hours of Smiles in the Old Town Hall. Until then, good night.
This is the Red Network of the National Broadcasting Company.
Colonel Stoop Nagel and Bud did appear in the Hollywood motion picture International House and remained popular on radio, but tensions between the members of the team eventually led to a split in 1938. Bud Hulick returned to radio in Buffalo, but F. Chase Taylor took his Colonel Stoop Nagel character to other programs and writing endeavors nationally until his death following heart surgery in 1950. When the comedy team of Bob and Ray roared out of Boston during the 1950s, around the same time Stan Freberg did the same from Hollywood, the three admitted among their biggest influences was what they had heard on the radio in the 30s from Colonel Stoop Nagel and Bud. That concludes this week's broadcast of Echoes of a Century. This program was an independent production by Doll Shoe Radio Creations, copyright 2005. Produced in the studios of WLSU La Crosse, an affiliate of Wisconsin Public Radio, on the La Crosse campus of the University of Wisconsin. I'm King David McKenzie. Thanks for listening. I hope that you'll join us again at this same time next week. Until then, remember, fear and God do not inhabit the same space.